we feature an interview produced by the Municipal Eco Resiliency Project with John Brush of Tryon Life Community Farm.
My name is John Brush. We're here at Tryon Life Community Farm, TLC Farm. It's a farm, it's a place for growing food, but it's more than that. It's like a little hub of the revolution. TLC Farm has been here for 20 years. We're in our 20-year anniversary cycle. It has a pretty amazing origin story that I'll talk about a little bit, but what we are is a place for people to connect with the earth and to learn about how to be part of the earth in a more profound way, even as we're living in a city. And a big part of that is growing food. A big part of that is not only individually growing food for sale in the market, but also welcoming all kinds of people who may not have that background themselves. So we have youth education programs, there's field trips that come through here, and kids, many of them for the first time in their lives, get to see food growing and to recognize that it doesn't just come from a store. So we have the educational focus. It's also is a two residential collectives on the land in addition to the nonprofit TLC Farm, and there's other organizations and communities that are part of the land. The land is 7 acres tucked into this bigger forest total, kind of the quote unquote property lines. We're on the side of Mount Sylvania, which is an old shield volcano. Here, so there's like basalt cliffs on the one side that take up that portion uphill, and then this flatter area is a little shelf of the high point of the Missoula floods back in the Ice Age, and the part that was fully cleared in the last century forms about maybe 4 acres of that 7 acre total, and then this area that we're in right now that's got more annual production is about an acre and a half. And then we have about 2 acres of orchards that have about 108 fruit trees. We grow a wide variety of things. Certainly the fruit is the largest single crops we have. 30 or 40 different varieties of apples, dozen of Asian pears and European pears, and we have plums and medlars and figs. We are obviously fully into fruit harvesting season and doing a lot of preserving and making cider and drying fruit and tomatoes and even peppers and eggplant in the greenhouse. We also have certainly tons of kale and arugula and chard and all the other kinds of greens. With 20 people living on the land, a good portion of what we grow, especially of the annuals, we are able to eat or preserve ourselves. We've had many, many different organizations come and use the space for like organizing retreats and that sort of thing. And then we have different organizations that are more kind of ongoing participants. So like right now, the Elderberry School of Botanical Medicine comes here 10 weekends out of the year and has their classes here. And then they also can actually not only talk about medicinal plants, but actually come out into the garden and see them and interact with them. We are partnering with the Cottonwood School to have this be a major ongoing week after week field trip site. Having more coordination among urban farms and urban farming, having more of an infrastructure to support each other is something that I think I would love for all of us to be able to do more of. That's what we're all here for, is for folks to get involved. So there's lots of ways to do that. We have regular events. We have like a monthly potluck, and we just had a festival at Apple Fest, and we have other sorts of events like that. So if you get on our email list, you can find out about that. So the website's tryonfarm.org. If you are connected to an organization that wants to host a retreat or wants to have a meeting or to do an event, we have an outdoor kitchen, we have a 30-foot yurt, we have a kind of open village green area, there's a cob sauna. If you want access to a place that you can build a relationship with month after month, season after season, year after year, if you want to, you know, get together with a crew of people you already know or people you meet through the organization to take on a project, we're here for that. The nonprofit is volunteer run, and so there's the different programs, the events program, the workshops program, the education program. We have volunteer orientations that people can get involved and can sign up for those working groups. Yeah, so there's two residential collectives, Cedar Moon and the Sacred Lands Alliance. They're separate organizations that overlap here. They co-manage the land with the nonprofit. You know, the residential collectives, a lot of folks who are part of them also volunteer with the nonprofit. I think that that's actually also something that's really important for an urban context is to shift away from thinking that the only way to have more low-income housing, the only way to have more kind of space for people in the city is to demolish what exists, throw it in the landfill, and then to build more single-family or single residential spaces. I think that retrofitting what we have currently to having more people there is actually a really valuable alternative path that is much more efficient for the land. And I think that for me, that ties to the value of farming and the value of urban farming in the sense that it's modeling ourselves on an ecosystem. Well, that's something that we can do also in where we live and how we live. And so that's a lot of what we do here with the residential collectives. 25 years ago, this was a rental and the owners decided that they needed to cash out. And so they sold the rights to the land to a developer. They had plans to turn it into 23 McMansions. People who were connected to the land felt that that was really not the best way forward for the world as a whole, to just demolish everything and turn it into oversized houses for individuals. We launched a wide-ranging campaign to, on the one hand, persuade the developer that it wasn't in their interest to demolish the land, and on the other hand, to take over their purchase contract and buy the land. It had many parts to it. There were direct action elements, there were community organizing elements. Ultimately, hundreds and then thousands of people became directly involved in the land here, became part of working to create earthen building structures, to develop education programs, to start to practice what the vision of a different way of life with the land can look and feel like, and ultimately to raise $1.5 million. And it ended up being, you know, something that school kids with, you know, have a bake sale and contribute to, and neighbors would find out about it and give money to, and it was ultimately 1,500 donors and connecting a lot of different like nonprofits and government partners and things like that. We're reflecting on what's happened over the last 20 years after that. What does it look like and felt like to kind of try to practice that sense of embodying the life of a new way, of a revolutionary way of being with the land, with all of the contradictions and challenges of being inside capitalism and the empire. Urban farming is really important. I think it can take multiple forms. And I think the core reason why it's important is that the world we're in is one in which humans are becoming kind of delaminated from the rest of life. I think the result of that is going to be disaster. But at some level, I feel like the kind of visceral, like the solution that's in our bodies is learning how to actually feel ourselves, to notice in our actual daily lives and our senses that we're part of the rest of life. You have an urban farm, it's easier to come to market, have a farmer's market, and you have a relationship with your customers. I think that's really important. But I think the more you take that next step and you can welcome your customers or the people that are eating food to come and actually experience the land that they're getting their food from, the more that can then translate into people having their own gardens, potentially collaborating and having a variety of different forms of food growing or animal tending that is kind of infused in the whole fabric of the cities. We can talk about food sovereignty and we can talk about the importance of, you know, reducing the distances that goods travel for carbon impacts. Those are really important. It's cheaper to grow your own food than it is to buy food that's had all these inputs. That's really important to make for equity reasons. I think those are important things that kind of fit into the logic in some ways of a kind of quantitative assessment of where we're at, what we need. But for me, it's the qualitative transformation that's the most important. Having a decentralized food infrastructure obviously reduces the amount of input you require, both because you don't have so much transportation, but also because the key input in a local food system is human labor. It takes more work to grow things in a interplanted sort of way, at least at the beginning, and it requires a lot more kind of detailed attention. However, there's two real big benefits to that. The first is that you can actually produce more per acre if you do it that way, not just per dollar of inputs, but actually per acre. But you can also weave people, as I was saying, together with the land. And there's an opportunity for people in an urban environment to value food differently, to value the labor that goes into food differently if they're actually part of it or if somebody that they know is directly part of it. When you have, you know, an urban infrastructure in which you're not having hundreds of acres or thousands of acres being farmed at once, but instead you have, you know, small parcels in a whole bunch of different places, and you have many, many, many different small farms and even more farmers who are involved with it, who are working together, you have the opportunity for a lot of different types of experiments to be happening. For a lot of reasons, I think that it's, you know, completely crucial for us to have urban farms in the face of the impending climate danger. We're facing down profound transformations in our world. And what's coming in the next 10 years, in the next generation, and the generations to come is going to be really challenging, really difficult, a lot of rapid dislocation of people and of plants and of animals. And that means food systems in particular. And so the business as usual cannot continue for a whole host of reasons. Obviously, there's tons of fossil fuels that go into the existing agricultural systems. That just cannot continue. One way or another, it's going to change. The question is, who's going to control that change, and how are we going to make it something that people have as much of a sense of solidarity in the sense of we can do this together? Having a decentralized infrastructure on all levels is the best way for regular folks to be able to be in control of the things that we depend on. And food is right up at the top of that. The way that we are going to generationally navigate these coming years of tumult and change and disruption is going to be by being able to continue to pay attention to the life around us. So I hope the legacy of TLC Farm continues to be that transformation of people at individual levels. And then I'm looking forward to the future. I'm really excited about more partnerships with other organizing efforts so that that can scale from the individual level into the emergence of more and more crews, collectives, movements of people who are getting experience and practice in one spot or another, and then expanding, nucleating, creating new experimental zones and continuing to share with each other. So I hope that TLC Farm can continue to be a hub of that sort of earthbound revolutionary self-organization. Seed planted but grew up in the conditions where heart environment's fed us but no nutrition there. Check it better with what I wrote there. Feeding the soil, hoping to grow now. From the youth, we ain't had a truth. Disconnected from the roots, we ain't had a proof. It consumed every part of the food we grew now. Just because they wanna profit off you. In every hood, it isn't good. They'd rather feed in the addiction than feed us all with the cure. Rather be selling the prescription division. Wishing the mission division isn't the ripper. We gotta be coming together by building neck of resiliency.
Okay, that was the ever so powerful Merck produced song Roots featuring Wazla, Mike Crenshaw, Tony Hill, and Talilo.